Chaz.
Bruce, every time I hear your voice or think of your name, a big smile comes across my face. I think about all the times I laughed out loud listening to PLR, to you and Brian doing the morning show.
That was fun. Those were some good years.
We're going to go through everything, including the question I got asked the most when we came in after you guys. But why don't we start from the beginning? How did you get into radio?
So I was going to Hobart College up in Geneva, New York. And
is that near Buffalo?
It's midway between Syracuse and Rochester. So it's about 2 hours from Buffalo, where I grew up. And I had a fraternity brother who was working on the radio station, and we showed up there one day, frankly, half in the bag. There was a football game. After the football game, we went over to the radio station. And I walked in, and this friend of mine gave me this card to read, and I went into a little booth on the side of the studio and read this card, and I looked up as I'm reading the card. A buddy of mine is mooning me through the class. So I thought I had lost it and screwed up and came out of the studio, and somebody said, you know, Bruce, you sounded pretty good. And the hook was in.
That was it.
That was it. And so continued to do radio there through college. I did play-by-play for sports. I had a music show. And then
what kind of music were you playing?
It was some music of the late 70s, you know, Allman Brothers, Who, Stones.
Oh, okay, PLR stuff.
It was PLR stuff, 100%. And then moved back in with my parents after I graduated in Buffalo, and then took an internship on the local station that I grew up listening to there, 97 Rock. And worked my way up to the morning show there. And then they fired us all.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, they fired us all. They changed formats. They ended up going back to the format. So they're now still, I think they just celebrated their 50th anniversary as well. So they fired all of us, and that's what led to me coming to Connecticut.
They celebrated their 50th as a rock station?
Exactly.
But they went off for a while and came back.
Yeah, it was, I want to say it was less than a year before they went back.
Was it Neil Mirsky, the program director of WPLR, who brought you in?
Yeah, that was an interesting story, too. So as it turned out, right around the time that they fired all of us, which was 1985, early in 85, Neil Mirsky had been... He had actually worked, I think, at MTV for a while when it was kind of in its infancy. And then he had been programming a station down in Florida, I think. But he was dating a woman in Toronto. So he would fly into Buffalo and drive up to Toronto, about 2 hours north of Buffalo. And he had remembered hearing the show that I was on. And so I just, out of the blue, got a call from Mirsky one time, and he said, you know, look, I think you'd sound good with this guy Smith we have here doing the overnight show at PLR. And then so I flew up. I met Neil, and Manuel Rodriguez was the general manager at the time. Met him for a couple beers at the airport in Hartford, and really liked them, thought the idea sounded great. Came home, but I had a couple things were in the works in Buffalo, so I they offered me the job, and I turned them down.
Oh, wow.
And as soon as I hung up the phone, I said, I think I've just made a huge mistake. And sure enough, the phone rings again, and they're calling back, and they offered me, I think I negotiated my way up from $22,000 a year to $24,000 a year. So they went up to the big number, $24K, and I was like, that was my moment where I said, okay, I'm in.
And had you met Brian yet?
I had not.
Wow.
So they literally, I said, okay, I'll do this. I'm psyched. I said, when do you want me? They said Monday. I think this was like a Wednesday.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So I flew in to Bradley on a Sunday, on that following Sunday, checked into the Howard Johnson's Long Wharf.
I remember that place.
Yep. Met up with Neil Mirsky. He picked me up, I think, at the airport. And then I met Brian at, it was then the Rusty Scupper.
Oh, yeah.
And that was the first time I had ever met Brian Smith, and we went on the air for the first time the next day.
How was that first meeting? What was your first impression?
So I was like, I remember he had a big Fu Manchu mustache, and I can't say this was going to be the first time I really had a show where I was an equal partner with someone. So
yeah.
I was just, looking forward to, meeting the person I was going to work with and then making it work.
Well, the chemistry was definitely there on the air. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was, we just kind of went in and did it. And, the next day, he actually, the first time he introduced me, one of the first times, he said, "Here's my new partner, Bruce Banner."
You don't want to make me angry.
Don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry. And I remember it was such a kind gesture, actually. He had brought muffins in. Doing morning radio, it's all about the food. But I hadn't figured out, kind of where to get breakfast. I was just at the hotel, and never has a, muffin tasted so good to me in my life.
Well, it's a gamble to leave your life and come into a new market, do a morning show with someone you've never even met,
Right. Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah. It's good. I think in hindsight, I now trusted what Neil Mirsky heard, so he obviously, actually what had happened was, this is interesting, it wasn't as a direct a thing, but so I had been working with this guy in Buffalo named, his name was Snorton Norton, Larry Norton. And it wasn't for the reason you think.
Oh, really?
I guess it was because he would snort when he laughed.
Oh, okay.
When he was younger. But had nothing to do with blow.
Anytime he went anywhere, though, he had to explain that.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. No. It's because I laugh.
It's not about cocaine.
It's not about coke.
But the funny thing was he had been sending. So we all get fired. We're all, out of work. And so we're kind of, feeling out other stations in Buffalo. And do we go as a team? And so I don't think Neil called me directly first. I think he called Larry Norton first. He called Snorton first. And so Larry Norton's sending these tapes, and I'm kind of not paying attention. And then it was Neil called and said, at first I guess they were talking about as a team, but then he said, Snorton, we just want Bruce because I think he would sound good with Brian Smith. And it's funny, I heard the tape later. There was very little Bruce Barber on the tape, so I give mad props to Neil Mirsky.
Clearly a good match.
Yeah, yeah. And it was funny because it was the way I always describe it to people is we are very different people, but with the exact same sense of humor. And so that's, I think, why it really worked. And we would, kind of come at things from those two different perspectives, but with that shared sense of humor.
And when you guys came in, PLR was not a thing in morning drive.
No, that's right. It was Dr. Chris
Dr.
ruled
Chris,
the market.
Ron Romer.
Ron
on
Romer.
An AM.
Yes.
Imus would poke in every now and then.
100%. Stern was just getting going.
Yeah.
But he was afternoons at the time. He was in the afternoon on WNBC. It was fun beating Dr. Chris, I have to say. It was fun. What was really fun was beating Glenn Beck when he was on KC 101.
Did he call you once live on the air?
Chaz, that is one of my, you've brought up one of my favorite stories. So obviously I can tell from, you know, what you've referenced so far in the conversation, we can swear because it's a podcast.
Yes.
So the story is we're in the studio one day and we started, you know, Glenn obviously was always looking for ways to stir things up when he wasn't weeping. And he, so we start to hear, hey, he's calling other morning shows and just putting them on the air. So I said, okay, you know, and trying to think of, you know, do we take the bait or whatever? So sure enough, at some point he calls and it comes through the switchboard. Somebody comes in the studio, says Glenn Beck's on line two. So I looked over Brian. I said, I got this. So I walked into the production studio. This is when we were still over on Dixwell Avenue. And I realized that even though, you know, all those years, I don't think we ever used a delay. So it was all, you know, bad things could happen. But the thing is, you know, we would also, when we would call people, we'd sometimes at the beginning would be like, you know, hey, you're on the air, and then just launch into it. But we were made aware of the fact that there's an FCC rule that says you have to have, as you know, you have to have the person's permission before you can put them on the air. And you have to give them a chance to say no thanks before you put them on. So I said, all right, if Glenn's, you know, playing with this, I'll take that bait. So I just picked up the phone and just went, fuck. And you just hear this silence, and then I just hung up. And what ended up happening, I talked to people that had heard that in Stop and Shop. And the thing that was amazing was that Glenn then got called into his general manager's office. I think he got suspended, and he had to call us and apologize. It was beautiful. It was just, I love it.
That is so Bruce Barber.
That's how you answer the phone.
That's how you answer.
Glenn Beck. Fuck.
Fuck.
Fuck. He ended up making a lot more money than I did, but I had my one shot.
Oh, that was great. So then you guys end up at one point just taking the show and leaving PLR and moving to Tampa. How did that happen?
Yeah, what happened was, you know, basically once we started, you know, having some success against KC101, they started thinking in terms of, you know, potentially how do we get these guys out of the market? And so the first thing that happened was a company that owned KC101 owned a station in San Diego. So the station in San Diego reached out to us, and, you know, we had some pretty serious talks with them. The thing that was of concern was this station, and it's a pretty well-known rock station. I can't remember the name of it, but at the time, I don't know if this is still the case, but their transmitter was over the border in Tijuana. So if you took that job, you were based in San Diego, but you'd have to drive down to Mexico every morning. So I don't know. I was concerned with that. But then we started, you know, the phone started ringing with some other offers, and the one in Tampa was one of them. And they basically, you know, we had worked up from the $22,000 benchmark or 24 at the beginning to, you know, I don't know what it was, a little more than that.
I think I remember.
Yeah.
35.
That's very good.
I think it was
35, and they doubled that in Florida.
Wait, no, you got to tell this story like you told me years and years ago. You and Brian get on the phone and you decide before you bring him, the program director, in to the conference call that you guys would double your salaries and see what they would say.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and he's like, no problem. I'm like, what?
What?
You know.
There wasn't even a hesitation.
We were asking for too little at that point. Yeah. But yeah.
You guys, I forgot who spoke, but one of you said 70. Okay. Before you were done with the Y in 70. Okay. Yeah, and there was this long pause
of like, oh my God, fuck. You know, 70 and sunshine. And I was like, you know, we were like done.
Yeah. So you guys weren't under contract with PLR.
No. And we were just about to renegotiate. And we knew that we were going to get, you know, beaten up for, you know, probably 40, you know, to get to 40 or something.
Right.
And you know, and they did end up, I think they came up and matched it or close to matched it at a certain point. But by then it was, you know, it was misplaced, but there was this kind of idea that, oh, it's going to be sunshine and Florida's just going to be like a sunny New Haven. And that was not the case, as we discovered.
Yeah. So you didn't want to give PLR the opportunity to counter the offer?
I think we thought about it. But I think at that point it was, you know, and this was a, you know, Tampa was a much bigger market.
Yeah.
You know,
so the upside, you're not maxing out a 70, you're starting a 70.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
What was that like? Did you guys walk in together to tell Manuel, or how did that work?
Manuel
was the general manager at the time of WPR.
Exactly, yeah. And you know what? I cannot for the life of me remember that conversation. I think we did. I think we went in and, you know, he was pretty surprised.
Yeah, I must have been surprised, yeah.
Yeah.
But you guys are excited. You're like, yeah, we're out of here.
Yeah, that's right. So Manuel had always been, you know, he's a great legacy broadcaster, and he was, you know, he survived all those ownership changes and stayed in the business a long time. It was really successful, and it was, you know, I think partly because he was a really good negotiator, and you know, it was always so tough. So I think, you know, when we, you know, I think we felt, you know, wanted. And And the fact that, you know, we were being offered a lot of money and, I think it was just all of that. And I think at that point, you know, we were both pretty young and feeling like, well, who knows where it goes from there? You know, I think,
exactly. You
know, in that part of your career, you're trying to take it as far as you can.
What was Tampa like?
Tampa was weird. And it's like, I think we were so overconfident when we went to Tampa because I think we had had a lot of success in New Haven. And, you know, I remember my thinking was, well, you know, we can just go down there and do the same thing. But I remember I got down there and like one of the first things I saw was a truck flying the Confederate flag. And I was like, we are not in Kansas anymore, Dorothy.
No.
And then there was I remember being at an event one time and somebody came up to me and said, to Brian and me and said, you guys are them, you're them two Yankees from Connecticut. I was like,
Yankees?
Yeah, right. Last time I checked, that war has been over for a while. The real challenge was there was this show called Ron and Ron. And they were very popular, and it was very difficult. It became apparent pretty quickly that it was going to be hard to chip away at what they had established. And then what had happened was, you know, we had the nicest general manager down there, this guy named Dan DiLoretto, and, you know, he was like, as long as I'm working here, you know, you got a job and, you know, we're not going to, you know, the station's not for sale. The ownership's solid. 6 months in, they sold the station. And they brought in a new, they changed the format to, it was a metal format. It was like, that was kind of the hair metal era. And it was just apparent that now we weren't a good fit for them. And they weren't necessarily the new program director that they brought in. You know, we weren't necessarily what he had envisioned. So we had signed a 2-year deal, And at 1 year, both parties had the option to opt out, and we all kind of opted.
Yeah, you're like, we're good.
Yeah, we're good. Yeah, and exactly.
And it worked out because the morning show they put in to replace you wasn't doing well.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you contemplate going somewhere else first?
Well, no, they didn't. Look at Manuel. We were like, we called Manuel and we said, hey, stuff didn't work out down here. And he was hurt at the way we left. And so he was like, no, we're fine. We're good.
Oh, no shit.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He's like, we're good. So
where was that? 6 month mark, 9 month mark, 1 year?
So we went down there. It must have been, I don't know, it was like spring of, I think, 89. And then the contract was for a year and we didn't renew it. And so, maybe even earlier than that. But I think by like summer of 90. So I think we ended our deal in Tampa in like maybe March. And then we call up Manuel and he's like, no, you guys blew us off. We tried to meet, your offer down there. So no thanks. And so we were like, okay. And I was like, I understand. I get it. And so we had some interest actually from, RCH, right?
RCN.
RCN. We were talking to them. We were talking to CCC up in Hartford. I knew a guy at HJY in Providence, a guy I'd worked with in Buffalo. We were talking to them. And then Manuel heard that we were talking to all those places, and he was like, I've reconsidered. And so we, very quickly arrived at a deal and came back.
And then you guys had the run of runs.
Yeah, that's when it got cranked up.
Mary Lee was doing the night show. I was doing overnights. You guys come and do mornings. They take Mary Lee from the night show, move her into mornings with you, move me up to the night show.
Right. Gotcha. That's right. Okay. Yeah.
When did you know in that run that maybe things aren't great between you and Brian, or what happened?
And I've obviously thought about it a lot, and I was, I was the one that initiated it. Basically had gotten to the point where I just wasn't happy. So I realize now really the thing was, so it's interesting again, going through this timeline, 1990, we come back. I think people were, well, we missed them. Now they're back. And so I think, and things just really ramped up and started going. At the same time, that's when I met my wife. And, she had two young girls. She was going through a divorce. The girls were 2 and 4. They're now in their 30s.
Wow.
Yep. So that's, I met Karen in end of 90, early 91. We got married in 93 and had Doug Barber, who's now, 27 and about to be a third-year medical student at Yale. And 3 years later, we had Andrew Barber, who just graduated from college and is going into wealth management. And that changed everything for me. It wasn't just overnight, but little by little, I just started being less comfortable doing the kind of shtick we were doing. And then the tension really started building when, I was kind of saying to Brian, like, I want to kind of pull this into another direction. I really felt like this was, there was something great there. This idea of here's the married guy with kids and here's the, single guy living the bachelor's life. And I think we were both you know, I'm still a work in progress with respect to communicating with people. You know, I've been married for 27 years now and still working on it, being good at communication. I think I was horrible. You know, I think both Brian and I didn't have the kind of, you know, language to, you know, state what we wanted and to meet halfway, you know. And, you know, as a result, I would say by the late 90s, I was just really unhappy. By about 98, I wasn't proud of the show or the, you know, the stuff I was saying and doing on the air.
What were you saying that you weren't proud of?
You know, I think the big thing was, you know, when you have daughters, you know, you start to think about, you know, I started thinking about how we were talking to about with women, you know, and I'll tell you this, this came into sharp focus about a year ago. I went, guy walks into a bar. I went into a bar in West Haven where I work, and there was a woman behind the bar, and she says, Bruce, do you remember me? I brought you breakfast in a bikini. And I was like 18 years old. And I tell you what, I was mortified. You know, I was like, but that was kind of the thing we were doing. You know, it was that kind of thing. And, you know, I look back at it now, you know, I mean, we're certainly living in another era now, but, you know, a lot of this stuff was just really insensitive to a lot of, you know, marginalized groups. And, you know, I just wasn't feeling it anymore. You know, I was changing. And, but, you know, Brian really wanted to do the same show. Quite frankly, Manuel, when I started, you know, going to him and saying I'm not happy, you know, he's like, look, you're making a lot of money. Put on an act. But so much of our show was really rooted in honesty, you know. And so I just wanted to be, you know, the honest guy that I'm going through these changes. I'm, you know, I'm a different person now. But look, there's a lot to laugh at in the life of a guy who's just gone from being single to married with four kids. But, you know, they're just, you know, Brian and I at that point just didn't have that kind of relationship where we could kind of navigate that, I think. So really, you know, I tell people this, from starting in like 98, I was driving to work with a stomach ache every morning. Wow. I mean, I was physically ill. And it just got to a point, you know, and they were bringing in consultants to try to, you know, and they were saying stuff like, look, just get all your ideas, you know, write them down on the, you know, board. We had moved to Milford by then on the dry erase board, and then just kind of talk during the commercials and go down the list and, you know, and collaborate. They were saying, come in a little early in the morning and talk about what you wanted. And, you know, I'd be in the studio and Billy would be in there and Mary Lee, and Brian wasn't. You know, and he just wasn't on board with any kind of, you know, change in that regard. So it just got to the point where I was like, it was about my health. You know, it was about my mental and my physical health that I had to stop. You know, I had to do something else.
Did any of this come out on the air, do you think? Did people sense that there was trouble?
Well, you know, what's interesting is, like, so many people did not, right? Because what we did earlier in our career is you know, Brian and I, again, with that difference, we would, you know, we'd get into some pretty serious fights. And in the early part of our career, we would just bring them on the air because the show is so much about, you know, just being honest and real in the moment. And then it got to a point where I was feeling, and again, this is when I was married with kids, I was like, you know, people got this at home. They don't want to hear that on the radio driving in the morning.
Right.
So I would just kind of, if it got there, I would just kind of shut down. And I own that, you know, potentially that was, you know, kind of passive aggressive. But I just felt like it wasn't just wasn't doing anybody any good. The classic was there was this great guy. I've seen him recently, actually. We had one of our regular callers was Ice Cream Dave.
Oh, yeah.
Ice Cream Dave one time brought in, around the holidays, brought in a Festivus pole. And so on this occasion, you know, and what would happen is Brian and I would, you know, be on the air and everything be fine and the listeners wouldn't know anything, but there was like some real tension and the mics would go off. And on this one occasion, we were just screaming at each other. And Dave's sitting there next to the Festivus pole. And I just turned to him at one point and just went, Dave, airing of the grievances. You know, so that was what it was like. And it was just, it was really too bad that we kind of just didn't have that ability to find the common ground because, you know, that was when, you know this, it's like they wanted to start to syndicate us. And other shows were doing that, and I think that would have been a possibility. But it was just, it got to a point where it was just untenable.
Yeah, bummer.
You know, I kind of just would go to them and say, you know, just a few times, like, this is just, I can't do this. So, you know, it's like, you know, can you move me around? You know, is there something else I could be doing? I said, you know, I'm just like, for my health, I can't do this. And so they would kind of like go, yeah, sure. And then it happened again. And at that point, so then they started.
What do you mean move me around? Like what, do afternoons or?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I don't know. I wouldn't have wanted to push Lappy out, but, you know.
Like middays.
Or move the show around. Right. Distribute us amicably about the station. But, you know, I really was pretty much at that point. I was like, you know, interpersonally just not working. And they were aware of that. You know, they were bringing in consultants and, you know, trying to find some way.
Consultants to try to get you guys to be able to communicate with each other.
Exactly. 100%.
Yeah.
And it didn't work.
They tried you guys out. They had you take different vacations, right? And they had Brian do a week and you do a week. And I think
So what happened was, that's where I was going with that. So what would happen was they wouldn't suggest that. It just ended up happening. You know, Brian would say, you know, sometimes Brian wouldn't take his time and then it would come to right before a ratings period or something. And they'd say, okay, I'm going to take it. So I'd be alone for a week and then sometimes I would be taking vacation and he'd be alone. So they actively considered, well, do we leave, you know, Bruce in there? And do we find a new partner for Bruce? Do we find a new partner for Brian? Do we get a whole new show? And so what ended up happening on that, you know, it was a Thursday morning in January of 2003. We had just had another great ratings book, and it was a Thursday, and they brought me into the conference room. I kind of hadn't heard from them in a while, you know, probably a couple months. And they brought me in, and they said, look, we've been really thinking about this. We understand you're unhappy. You know, I was excited about a lot of stuff that was going on in digital technology and production, and so, you know, there's part of me that was just ready to move on and try something new. So basically what they said to me is, like, look, you know, we've got Chaz and AJ are willing to, you know, they basically said, we want you and Brian. You know, we've tried all these other, you know, ways of doing it. And where we're at is we want you and Brian. You know, we'll sign you to a short-term contract, long-term contract, whatever. Or Chaz and AJ are on Long Island. They can start in 2 weeks. They would love to do this. So if that's the case, you can walk out of here. We'll pay you until I think our contract was up in May. So that felt like, oh, that's going to be a lot of time getting paid my full vig. And I said, you know what? Thank you. Goodbye. And you
know, I was already signed at that point, so that would have costed them a lot of money.
No kidding.
Oh yeah, January. Yeah,
because yeah, really?
I was on the air in February.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And like I had to maneuver through my contract with the company I was working for on Long Island, so that took some weeks to do.
Right. Right. Yeah.
But yeah, that's they were willing to spend some big money to get the right show in there.
Right, because I just, you know, look at, we were meeting with consultants. This was going on for years, and they just knew that, you know, something I think eventually was going to give. And then, you know, what ended up happening, and this is where I felt bad for the audience, because they did say to me, okay, well, look at, all right, you know, you're going to go, and we understand, and we'll give you the opportunity to do a final show. So I'm like, okay, let me talk to Brian. So they brought Brian in right after that and told him, and I feel badly for him. You know, it was really, you know, was a shock for him and very difficult. But, you know, he called me up and said, you know, why is this the first, you know, I said, I've been very unhappy and, you know, he said, well, why is this the first time hearing this? And I just said, dude, that's the problem. This is not the first time. I've been saying this for a long time. And at that moment, I knew there was no way we would be able to do a final show.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that was that.
Holy shit. And that's the last conversation you had with him?
For a while. We've since... You know, we ended up kind of reconnecting at a couple of funerals, sad occasions, when Donna Goodman passed away.
Right.
We were both there.
She was the sales manager at PLR.
Yeah. When Sam T passed away, Brian and I were both there. And, you know, look, I think we both, you know, now understand a lot more, you know, so... you know, I hold, you know, there's no animosity on my part. I can't speak for Brian, but, you know, it was, now I just look at it, it was a great run. You know, and I do take responsibility for, you know, whatever passive aggressive way I had of communicating with people at the time. You know, I probably would have handled it differently, you know, as the 64-year-old Bruce Barber, compared to the however old I was then.
Well, that's what life is about. It's about learning and growing.
Yeah, 100%. You know? Yeah. 100%.
That's the struggle. You know, if you get to the end and you learn nothing, then that's a problem.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
You know, and as it turned out, it was such the right thing. You know, it was just such the right... It was... For me, it just felt like, just with me personally and for all the things I've been talking about, just the way with my life changed, it was good to go out on top, you know,
right.
and to now I just really cherish those years. And, you know, and it's interesting, you know, I think I've spent a lot of time talking about the inability, you know, our inability to kind of connect on certain issues. But as I think back on it, and I tell people this now, you know, they say, you know, what do you miss about it? And what I really miss, this is honest to God truth, I think the thing I missed the most was just the time when the music was playing, just being in the studio shooting the shit with Brian and Billy and Megan and, you know, when it was Mary Lee and the people that would come and go. That was, you know, that was a real sense of camaraderie. You know, that was very much my, you know, my social life at that time, and that was my... That was my crew. So, you know, and I missed those great, you know, those moments we created on the air and the connections we made with our audience. You know, it was really special. But, yeah, I always say with Brian and I, Brian and me, I believe is grammatically correct, that we were like two brothers fighting over the last piece of chocolate cake.
Right.
You know, so it was, and I think for so many years that competitive thing really worked for the show. You know, and then it just got to a point where it didn't.
Well, you guys both had vision, so you had two drivers of one car. That's tough.
And that's right. And I think, you know, I look back at it that that was kind of something that was just built in that was going to cause problems. I mean, so Neil Mirsky hired us, and he was kind of, we both followed what he had to say. Then I think when he left, all of a sudden, you know, here Brian and I were on, you know, ostensibly equal footing, but nobody, it wasn't a clear person calling the shots. And I think, you know, that was difficult.
That's where you start getting trouble.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I remember how many pairs of scissors we had in the studio so you could clip pieces of the newspaper up.
yep. And that's, you know, that's one of the great things about Brian Smith, I will say, is that he just loved reading the papers.
Right.
You know, and we used to have such a great time. It's funny, I work at the University of New Haven now. I teach radio and podcasting to students.
Perfect.
And
job.
I run, you know, the college radio station here, WNHU. And, you know, you talk to the students and it's like, you know, you were getting our news from, you know, we had to clip the papers, you know, and we'd read the, you know, the Register and the New York Post
and the teletype.
Rip and read.
Yeah,
exactly.
And read, yeah.
But that was, that was so much fun. And then you'd happen on the story that was, you couldn't wait to talk about it. And, those were some good times.
Yeah. You guys created something that hadn't been heard in Connecticut, hadn't been done on PLR. You know, you came in during an evolutionary period. I mean, it was this hip 70s rock station. And then it became obvious that to stay relevant, it would have to be able to compete with radio stations that everyone was listening to, not just kids who want to go to the rock concert.
Right. No, that's right. Yeah. That's right. Well, I think a lot of it, our timing was perfect. And so, you know, I got to give credit to you and AJ that, you know, you came in when, you know, you've been doing it for a while, but you came in where the, you know, things were kind of set. And that in a way was tough because there were expectations.
I would rather have taken over a number 6 morning show than a number 1 morning show.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, definitely. And, you know, and you know, to your credit, you've kept it at number 1. But it was – so for us, just everything kind of came together perfectly because if you think about it, you know, so I started my career in, you know, in commercial radio in 1980 – and then came to PLR in 85. So it was a situation where, you know, FM radios were starting to, they weren't standard in cars.
Right.
You know, it cost a lot of money to get an FM radio. And then, you know, back in the 70s, if you had a car, a lot of times I've talked to people who owned FM stations, they would do giveaways for FM converters just so people could listen to your station in their cars. So by the mid 80s, you know, FM radios were in all the cars. And so, you know, that was a moment. And then, you know, you had Imus and Stern kind of paving the way for this very kind of stream of consciousness, improv, irreverent, test the what's the envelope, you know, what's the line. And, you know, so we were just kind of right place at the right time, I think.
Well, that, but the talent too. Right place, right time, super talent. And it was cool doing the overnights, watching you come in, always so chipper.
Still to this day, I'm a morning person.
Really?
It's so funny. Brian was not.
No.
Brian, I would roll in about 10 minutes before the show. Brian would roll in about 5 minutes after the show started, just
right.
Looking deathly. Deathly ill. Like, what am I doing here?
WPLR has a history of just great talent coming through the door. And this morning show is just so legendary. People still talk about it today. So congratulations to you for that.
Well, thank you. Yeah, that was, you know, that was such a great period of my life. But I tell people I've had such a bizarre career path, right, from kind of the morning shock jock to a independent producer for public radio to a guy working on a college campus, which is someplace I never thought I'd end up. And, you know, and this may be, you know, the thing that I'm finding most rewarding.
You've become a Yoda, right? For
say fuck to Glenn Beck, you will.
Well, it's I'm glad that my career crossed your career path and that I got to know you and, you know, not only listen to you, but see you work and have this chat with you.
Thank you. I'm, you know, and I'm so glad that, you know, you that if we were going to leave, that, you know, you, I think you've been such a, you and AJ have been such a, such wonderful stewards of the brand, if you will. You know, and I think, you know, what you bring to the table is exactly what we've been talking about, which is, you know, this passion for the medium, you know, and also just the passion for PLR, which is just, it's such an amazing radio station.
It really is.
Such an incredible, I mean, very, just very special and very unique. And, you know, and what I teach my students is this amazing bond that is formed when you're working in an audio medium like radio. You know, it's such an intimate medium. It's so, you know, one-on-one. And, you know, I think you've just, you've picked up the ball and run with it. You're, you guys are getting close to our time, right? You're, you know, when do you hit 18 years?
Yeah, we're at 18 now. So
wow, so you're, we're right at the, you've over, you're overtaken us.
Well, I wouldn't put it that way, but you know how tough that is.
Oh, well, a mad respect, man. I'm like, how, I look back on it now, I'm like, how did we do that 5 days a week, 48 weeks a year? I have no idea, and yeah, you're doing it, and God bless you.
Well, thanks. Well, here's to another 50 for PLR.
Definitely, definitely. And here's to as many years as you can squeeze out of it. Keep going, man. I'm pulling for you.
Thank
Keep
you, brother.
Train running.